Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. My name is Boris Chassaigne. I'll be with you for the next half hour. On today's show, in Revelstoke, BC, the newly formed municipal council is an all-man, all-white cast. Some worry they might have trouble thinking out of the box.
Who you surround yourself with can be a big boost for including women in the political process. Any elected representative has a responsibility to ensure that they're involving their community in the process.
Should municipalities have to foot the bill to extend water and sewer services to privately owned housing developments? That's the question the Region of Queens Council is trying to answer.
On our future land use zoning and documents, this does show the land in question is part of future designated land for municipal services.
The North Preston Community Center received $120,000 to develop a new Afrocentric community hub.
So it's a big dream, very small, little, quaint, little community, little hub spot, but it's a start. So, you know, it's better to start small and have something successful than to go large and not have it happen at all.
And the white sands and clear blue waters of Carter's Beach attract thousands of visitors every year. Will it stay open to the public or become a natural reserve?
Unless you put a big electric fence around that place, you're never keeping people out of there.
These stories and more on Viewpoints. Welcome.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
Today we travel from one end of the country to the other, but our first stop is in British Columbia, where Revelstoke's new all-male council has embarked on a four-year term. Revelstoke Mayor Gary Sultz was sworn in for a second term on November 1st. Revelstoke population is half man and half women. About 6% of the population is composed of visible minorities, but the city is being represented by an all-white, all-male council. Lim Lupke, executive director of Revelstoke's Women's Shelter Society, worries that some women will have to work hard to have a voice in council decisions, especially as Revelstoke is going through a housing and food security crisis and is also growing into a resort community. But Revelstoke is not the only city in the country to suffer from what people call a crisis in candidacy. David Black, a political scientist at Royal Roads University in Victoria, notes that in the latest municipal elections in Ontario, which were also held in October, 20% of the available positions were held by incumbents because people weren't stepping up to run. Moreover, data collected in 2018 by the Federation of Canadian Municipalities shows nationwide that only 18% of mayors and 28% of councillors were female. Community leaders warned the mayor and council will have to work extra hard to seek out perspectives and opinions that are different from their own. Megan Dooling first spoke to Lynn Lupke, the executive director of the Revelstoke Women's Shelter Society.
I think Revelstoke's really changing. We're in a housing crisis, we're in a food security crisis, we're becoming, you know, a resort community. And so I think it's really important, again, to have those women's perspectives and women's issues come to the table.
Lynn Lupke is the executive director of the Revelstoke Women's Shelter Society. She said women also need to work hard to get their voice heard.
I don't think it really matters who our councillors and our mayors are, as long as we're getting the message out there and we're doing our homework, we're asking the right questions, we're bringing things to, you know, meetings, and we have some input in council and the mayor's office. So I think there are a lot of women in Revelstoke that hold positions in social sectors, like myself, that do have a lot of, that do have a voice at the table. And I think maybe we're happy there because our voice is being heard without the politics or the political problems that go with it, I guess.
Nicole Sherlett was a councillor for the last 4 years. She was running for mayor, but lost to incumbent Gary Sultz.
I think they have a big task on their shoulders to make sure that all voices are heard and that as they're making decisions, that they are mindful of their bias that they can't help but have.
Equal Voice is a national nonpartisan organization that works to get more women involved in the political process at all levels of government. Ali Boyd chairs the BC chapter. She says the visual representation of an all-male mayor and council does matter.
The public visual of an entirely male-dominated team, that matters. The second piece is that it's then not completely representative of the community's values and ideas when it's just one gender, really.
Boyd says Revelstoke's mayor and councillors can start working now to identify women who may want to run for office in 4 years.
Who you surround yourself with can be a big boost for including women in the political process. Any elected representative has a responsibility to ensure that they're involving their community in the process. But, you know, who they hire as city manager, who they hire as their team, and who they involve in their day-to-day, you know, outreach for the community as well.
Revelstoke's first mayor and council was elected into office in 1899. They all have mustaches and are wearing hats, but they look a lot like the council we have today. All white, all male. Kathy English is the curator of the Revelstoke Museum and Archives. When she shows a photo of the original council to school children, they notice the hats and mustaches and the lack of diversity. The first female was elected in 1957, Lillian Wabe. She ran for council and actually got the most votes. English wasn't available for an interview, but she did point out that people can only vote for who's running. In this past municipal election, there were only two women running, one for mayor and one for council. They each got the lowest percentage of votes. Gary Sells is the mayor.
Well, you know, those things work out because people either want to run or not want to run. And it's concerning from a perspective of, you know, the old white guy. I look at it and go, how do we get others involved or feel comfortable to get involved?
There is, in fact, a crisis in candidacy in civic elections across Canada. In other words, people aren't running for mayor and council. David Black is a political scientist at Royal Roads University in Victoria.
Fewer and fewer people are running for mayor or for councillor positions in BC.
This is partly because mayor and councils are poorly paid.
That's especially true at the councillor level, where a barista could probably earn more, you know, if they hustled, than your average councillor in many, many communities.
The high workload is another deterrent. Shelby Harvey was Revelstoke's first female mayor. She was elected in 1995, before social media, and served a 3-year term. At the time, Harvey and her husband owned several businesses and were raising a family.
No, I would never do that again, having a business and being in a position like that. There was like 3 nights I didn't even go to bed. I had to stay up and pay bills and pay my men before I had to go out of town for some meetings and conferences and that. And because, you know, if you're doing your job, it is a time commitment. And you have to factor in, you know, your family and other things.
Revelstoke's current mayor said he had to think long and hard before running again because of the toll it took on his family. Not only the time commitment.
Well, it's been at times difficult. I've had everything from death threats to having my name maligned because people don't agree with the decisions that I've made at the table, or saying that, you know, I can't do the job, that sort of thing.
Harvey said it was the same for her.
Oh yeah, you know, it's goes with the job. You don't know what you're going to get, but I had an open door policy and. Yeah, there was some not nice things, but you know what? You just got to move on. But there again, too, there's an avenue that the police can come in and they'll deal with it. And, you know, when our council was working on the objectives of what people wanted for Revelstoke, there was a few cases where, you know, we had to have somebody talk to a couple of people. But you know what? You have to be strong, too, you know?
These days, social media emboldens the public to share their opinions even more, often anonymously. The internet also gives public greater access to information about work being done at the municipal level, and it has the potential to increase engagement in the political process. But that doesn't seem to be what's happening now. Here's David Black.
The turnout story in 2022 in BC for civic elections is horrifying, absolutely terrifying.
In Revelstoke, voter turnout was 30%. Across BC, it was 29.2%. Shelby Harvey says it's our responsibility to be engaged.
I was told that 6,000 people could have voted in this last election. It is our civic duty, but a lot of people didn't. And there's people I know that said, no, they weren't going to vote. And I asked them why, and they said, well, I don't feel that my vote's going to count. So why should I take my time, you know? And I said, well, if everybody thought that way, we wouldn't, you know, have what we have now.
Lynn Lepke agrees.
People just need to vote, right? And women need to step forward and put their names in. I think, yeah, we just have to be a little bit more assertive.
Gary Sulls knows this council is going to have to work hard in order to accurately represent the public.
I want to make sure that the incoming council is aware that, you know, we have our work cut out for us because we're coming from an angle and the male-esque type thought process. But that doesn't mean that we can't make decisions or work well for the community. So, but we'll be engaging with those in the community of the female gender to get their opinion and bring that to the table. That will be our job, is to go out and say, give me your opinion. Right. And be prepared that the opinions are going to be different than what we're used to. You know, I think about it in my own family, and my wife's very good about telling me her opinion. And it's not for me to fix things. It's for me to hear things.
Nicole Sherlette says the next 4 years can be an opportunity for the city to increase communication and engagement.
I would highly encourage anyone who has any inkling of being a leader. If you've been told you were bossy or you should sit down in the corner, please come and speak with a leader that you know in this community. Myself, Connie Brothers, other leaders in this community that are there and ready to talk to you and ready to help you get involved and make sure that your voice gets to be part of this. We have some really cool brains in this town, and I would love to see more of us rubbing together.
In Revelstoke, I'm Megan Dooling.
Should municipalities have to foot the bill to extend water and sewer services to privately owned housing developments? That's the question the Region of Queens Council is trying to answer, as a developer in Nova Scotia wants the region to pay over $700,000 to extend water infrastructure to 87 new homes built on the Dauphiné farmland in Liverpool, Nova Scotia. More with Ed Alverson.
A local developer is asking the Region of Queens to foot the bill to extend water and sewer services for the construction of 87 new homes in Liverpool. Larry Cochran wants to develop on the former Dauphiné farmlands across from the RCMP station on Shore Road. A presentation to Municipal Council anticipates over 11 years, 87 new homes will be built and $1.6 million will be raised in municipal taxes. Mayor Darlene Norman understands from the request that without the region putting in the 150 meters of water and 200 meters of sewer lines, the project will not proceed.
So if there's not sanitary municipal water and sewer, then the lot sizes on his property would have to be much larger. And he does not see that as financially feasible to push ahead on that.
Phase 1, projected to be completed in 7 years, would create 57 units, including 30 semi-detached homes, 3 single-family houses, and a 24-unit apartment building. The proposal presented to council suggests the $750,000 the region would receive in taxes from the development over the next 7 years would offset the estimated $725,000 cost of extending the services. The second phase would begin in 2030 and proposes to build another 30 semi-detached homes and deliver $820,000 to the municipal coffers. Norman says while it is unusual for the region to entertain a request from a private developer to provide municipal services, in this case, the action would just speed up a process that was already planned.
On our future land use zoning and documents, this does show the land in question is part of future designated land for municipal services.
The mayor says this is the initial ask from the developer, and she expects more information to come forward to council in a reasonable time period before they decide if they will support the project. I'm Ed Halverson.
You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.
And we stay on the East Coast. Nova Scotia Provincial Parks has set a public meeting to address concerns and plans for the pending transition of Carter's Beach to a provincial park. If you haven't seen that beach, it's really worth taking a peek on our Canada-Info website. Each year, the white sands and clear blue waters attract thousands of visitors, and each year issues arise due to the insufficient parking and amenities. Some have proposed closing Carter's Beach to the public and designating it as a nature reserve to protect the fragile ecosystem, but the Region of Queens' Mayor Darlene Norman says shutting down the beach is almost impossible.
Yes, there are people who just want Carter's Beach to, you know, never be developed as a day park. And realistically, unless you put a big electric fence around that place, you're never keeping people out of there. It has to have supporting infrastructure. It has to have better parking, and it has to have some type of washrooms. There will be a walk in to get there. You're not going to park on the doorstep, and it will be promoted as a quiet area.
That was Region of Queens Mayor Darlene Norman, interviewed by Ed Halverson in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
Hi, I'm Pamela Hassan in Smithers, BC, and you are listening to Viewpoints.
We stay on the East Coast and make our next stop at North Preston Society in Halifax, Nova Scotia. The North Preston Community Centre received $120,000 from the Canada Community Revitalization Fund last October to develop a new Afrocentric community hub. The community centre plans to repurpose a building that will serve local youth and community members. The society also received $60,000 from Black Business Initiative Society. North Preston's Future Community Organization Society was first established in 2015. This is a place where you can come and feel at home and feel comfortable to know that it belongs to you, says NPCC founder Miranda Kane. The new hub should be ready in the spring of 2023. Halifax journalist Sarah Gouda spoke with Miranda Kane.
Well, I'm Miranda Kane, and I'm the founder and CEO of North Preston's Future. The funding, we requested the funding moving back here from living away for many, many years. I noticed that there wasn't much movement, much growth in our community. So I'm like, our kids are not going to want to be able to stay here. So I thought to make up an organization called Preston's Future, which our main mission is to try to keep the generational history still going, to encourage our youth to stay in the community, give them some fun things to do and things like that. We received $121,000 along with, thankfully, Black Business Initiative. They felt, they believed in what we were doing as well. And so they also gave $20,000 of cash and then $40,000 of in-kind for any additional things that we may need, workshop trainings and things of that such to help with the growth.
Can you tell us a little bit about the new Afrocentric Hub? So what kind of programs and initiatives will be available there?
So it's a big dream, very small, little, quaint, little community, little hub spot, but it's a start. So, you know, it's better to start small and have something successful than to go large and not have it happen at all. So it's going to serve many different purposes. It's going to be an Afrocentric Swiss place for you. If you come into North Preston and you want to have a little bit of history about what we're going on, what's here, we're going to have that office space there for that. We're not a museum by any means, but it also will be like a community social spot. We don't really have places where we can gather. So it's going to have picnic tables there where you can come out if you're descendants of North Preston, but your family has passed on or your home's not there anymore. This is a place where you can come and feel at home and feel comfortable to know that this belongs to you. A place for our kids. We're going to have a little ice cream stand there where they can come in, purchase ice cream, candies. There's no convenience at all in our community. If our kids wanted to go anywhere, they have to travel so far. So this is just a start. Hopefully we'll be able to start adding in playgrounds and things of that sort so that we can be proud to be from where we are.
Can you tell us a little bit about your organization?
Yeah, so in 2015, I was a one-man band. I was just so floored with not seeing much movement in our communities. And the organization, it spun off because of the North Preston's Finest, the NPF, and where I know and my community knows that we're not what they portrayed us to be in the media. So I put a spin on it and I called it North Preston's Future versus North Preston's Finest. And it's working. So we needed to change that narrative of how society looked at our community. So I kept the NPF, and instead of calling it North Preston's Finest, I called it North Preston's Future. So that's what that was. So one of the other things that this money did was help us to put a new community sign in our community. Ours was very old, and this new sign makes us proud to be where we're from and proud to be back in our community. So the whole thing is for us. So everything that our organization is doing is for us, by us, and for us to be more proud of who we are.
Toronto, Ontario. You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLGI.
And finally to Ontario now, where Queen's University computer science student Nicholas Brassett launched an odd job phone service. Brassett founded the Kingston Crew Services, a new phone line to connect people with those who offer odd job services, such as house cleaning, snow shoveling, moving, as well as babysitting and painting. Brassett thought of this during the pandemic. While Ontario was under lockdown, he wanted his haircut done at home. Brassett feels that there's a market for such a service within the Kingston community, and he even hopes to expand his business to other major Canadian cities such as Toronto, Vancouver, Ottawa, and London. Karim Masna called him up.
We really do believe in convenience, and we think that if there's anything that people love, it's convenience. So instead of individuals having to research for, you know, movers or house cleaners, or looking into different markets into that, or looking into Google and having to go for the entire process of looking for those sort of people, we want to make it convenient for people around Kingston. We want them to have a phone line that they can call that they can rely on. And then we would do, we'd essentially be the third party.
How long has this idea been in the works?
A year and a half ago, I was sitting with my friends on a video call like this one. We were kind of just brainstorming. And I remember during that time, Ontario was locked down. And I myself, I really like having my hair done. I like having my haircuts. So I thought to myself, wouldn't it be nice if I had some sort of app or a phone line where I would be able to connect myself to a barber to come over to my house and cut my hair. So I kind of thought to myself and I thought to my friends, like, hey, wouldn't it be nice if there was some sort of app or phone line that I can call that would give me, you know, the network where they can or would connect me to a barber to come over and cut my hair. And so that's how the idea originated. We thought about many ideas and we talked to many people. We talked to people who are professional, who are, you know, who are in law, and we talked to people who are in tech. And we really looked deep into this and researched a lot into what this could be or what this can become. And eventually, I think 2 months ago at this point, I had a conversation with somebody here at Queen's University. And that conversation led me to really think about this idea again, in which I kind of thought to myself, I shouldn't make this so complicated. We can start small by having a phone line, and we have already people that would be willing to work and get somebody to shovel my driveway or to clean my home when I'm not there or when I'm there or whenever it's convenient.
I love how, you know, hearing the origin stories of new services or new products. And I think your story there about thinking, hey, you know, I want to have a haircut. What do? I love how that old expression, necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah, no, it's silly sometimes thinking about how it has all kind of started, but it's part of the story. It's part of how we became who we are right now. And we're lucky enough to have clients, and we continue to advertise it. And we also believe that this is a market here in Queens.
So you mentioned how, you know, right now you're starting small just as a phone line to contact. But tell me about some of your future goals for KCS.
I would love to have the opportunity, knowing the people I know in Ottawa, knowing some people I've also gotten to meet over here in Queens who come from Toronto or come from Vancouver and other places, to expand to those places and have different phone lines. I would say the long-term goal right now is to expand to different cities and hopefully develop that app or website that we would dream of.
Great. Nicholas, hey, thank you very much for spending some time to talk with me today.
That's it for us at Viewpoints. Our journalists this week were Megan Dooling, Sarah Gouda, Edward Alverson, and Karim Musna, National Coordinator Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada in Ottawa. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaigne. Check out our website at canada-info.ca. Take care of each other. See you next week.
Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You're attuned to Viewpoints. Check out our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at canada_lji.